Let me begin today by thanking our listeners here on WTSB and across the world on the internet, along with my thousands of friends on Facebook, for your kind comments and response to my commentary efforts. More than five decades ago, I began a radio and TV career in a small Alabama station. I'm convinced that this is what God put me here to do, to speak out for good against evil, tolerance against intolerance, and the lost value of common sense. I appear on WTSB today and worldwide on the internet simply because Carl Lamb asked me to do it. My respect for him and for his hometown local radio station brought me out of thoughts of retirement. Over five decades, I could count on listeners to phone in their responses to my comments, but today I'm left to seek your response either by email or by contacting WTSB. If you'll get a pencil, I'll give you my email address, and I hope that you will respond pro or con to my commentaries. My email address, T. Joyner, forget the Tom, tjoyner1942@gmail.com. tjoyner1942@gmail.com. If you missed it, WTSB can give it to you. I understand that many of you don't use email, and to those folks, I ask that you call WTSB and let them know that you appreciate and enjoy my commentaries. They'll tell me. I don't enjoy operating in a vacuum, and your comments of support are important. Last Thursday, Egyptian Flight 804 departed from Paris, bound for Cairo, Egypt. The plane and its passengers, men, women, and children, plunged into the Mediterranean Sea. All lives were lost. One terrorist group has already claimed responsibility for bringing down this civilian aircraft, and authorities are in full investigative mode. There is no doubt that ISIS, Al-Qaeda, and other terrorist groups have targeted France, and the French must respond to the challenge along with the rest of the civilized world. France should have declared war upon ISIS after the bombing of innocent people at a concert in Paris recently. If war is declared by France, it triggers all nations in NATO, the North American Treaty Organization, into that war, including the United States. The world can no longer sit by and watch innocent people die at the hands of Islamic terrorists. They are savages, they are not civilized, and they are consumed by hate against all who will not bow to Islam and Allah. The only solution to the Islamic terrorism problem is the complete annihilation of each and every group and individual, along with all who support them, whether financially or vocally. Consider, if you will, that you and your friends or family can no longer travel the world, indeed, even in our own country, without fear of death at the hands of ignorant jihadists, whose hatred extends back thousands of years. These are not rational people, and we should not consider them to be rational people. Under the Obama administration, our country has witnessed atrocity after atrocity. From Obama's protection of Bo Bergdahl, an army deserter, to his push to remove gender in America, Obama has shown his colors, and it has nothing to do with black or white. We will launch an all-out assault against ISIS and other Islamic terrorist groups at some point, but it will not be while Obama is president. We will never get Barack Hussein Obama to turn against Islamic jihadism. But the assault upon us and across the world will eventually result in a catastrophic loss of life. And only then will America understand that you cannot contain terrorism. You must destroy it. Our hearts go out to the friends and relatives of all of the innocent people who died on Egypt Air 804. Our resolve should be to declare war against those Islamic jihadists who have declared war against us. The America that I once knew is no more. For more years than I care to remember, I've heard the phrase, America is at a crossroads. That is not true today. America has gone beyond the crossroads, turned in the direction of disaster by the infusion of communists, socialists, and Muslims, whose goal has always been to fundamentally change our country, to bring it down to the level of the rest of the decadent world. They found the perfect individual to make their dreams possible in Barack Hussein Obama and his supporting cast of liberal Democrats who use the issue of race as a recruiting tool and the issue of economic inequality to gather votes from people who fail to put in the time and effort necessary to achieve economic parity. People who were encouraged to give up and depend upon government for their very needs. Black Americans have been conned into believing that they are victims, that the only slavery in world history was that of black Africans, when in fact it was black Africans who gave life to the slave trade by selling blacks from other tribes that they had captured to turn these poor souls into ready currency. Nevertheless, liberal Democrats used the public treasury to buy their votes. Some 8 years ago, liberal Democrats told black America that if they voted as a bloc to elect Obama to the presidency, he would take care of them. More than 90% of black Americans did blindly vote for what they were told was the first black president, the savior, sent to rescue them from their victimhood. Sadly, today it's obvious to all who possess common sense that the years under Obama were not kind to black people in America. Unemployment among young black Americans is at an all-time high. Fatherless homes have reached 75% of black families. Drugs ravage black neighborhoods, destroying families. And the rate of black Americans being killed by other blacks is off the charts. From January 1st to March 31st of 2016, in Chicago alone, an average of 300 blacks each month were killed. That's 10 human beings killed each day, and the rate has increased since March 31st. Every city in America that is under the control of black Democrats or white liberals are a dismal failure. Rather than acknowledge that fact, black Americans continue to be told that their poor conditions are the fault of some mythical white people. Black sellouts like Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton and Louis Farrakhan, along with black members of Congress like Elijah Cummings, Maxine Waters, Sheila Jackson Lee, and others, live opulent lifestyles on the backs of black Americans who are urged to forget the obvious lies of these people, and to turn their anger against white people. This has been going on for more than 50 years. And yet, with the help of a liberal mainstream media, the facts have been distorted and covered up. How can we be angry at people who have been hustled like that? How can we be angry at the sons and daughters of a people who were prevented from learning to read or write by Democrat founded Ku Klux Klan terror and the greed of plantation owners, black and white, and are still today discouraged from rising above their situation by a liberal left wing of the Democrat Party? Black Americans, who are encouraged to embrace victimhood and to deny their own responsibility to stay in school, prevent early pregnancies, and say no to drugs and drug dealers, a people who are encouraged to tolerate the intolerable rather than help police in their own neighborhoods. When someone mentions these things, others wonder about their motive. You need not worry about my motivation. I have many black friends, and I do not know of any black enemies except for race baiters and their followers. Surely I do not have enemies among the many black Americans that I have personally interacted with on a business or personal basis. What motivates my comments is a sincere desire to change the course of race relations in our country. I want to see black children have fathers in their lives. Black children who are taught to look others in the eye, give a firm handshake, and be confident about themselves. I want to see black children given hope in their homes and schools instead of a steady diet of racial hate and low expectations. If that is incendiary, all is lost. This is where we are in America today, increasingly divided along racial lines, encouraged to hate people who have more wealth than we do and demand that this wealth be redistributed, discourage achievement by handing out participation certificates instead of individual accolades to people who earn them, pretending that there is no such thing as gender, that grown men should be able to enter locker and shower rooms where young girls seek privacy. We are told to accept all deviant behavior, or Obama will withhold money from states that don't bow to his edicts. He's threatened to cut off the money necessary to feed poor children if his demands are not met. Obama has sought to make law in this country, not follow the laws in our Constitution. Regrettably, Congress, Democrats, and Republicans have allowed the Obama stampede against American values to go unchallenged. It is Congress that makes our laws. It is Congress that controls the purse strings. And it is Congress who could have stopped Obama's drive to fundamentally change America and to bring us down. Congressmen and women betrayed their own country for political reasons. Power and greed drives members of Congress, black and white, men or women. Keeping that power and feeding their greed far outweighs their loyalty to America. This latest attack on behalf of transgender people, who compose just 0.3% of our population, is just another example of the far left stoking hate and fear. It's not just the confused transgendered person we have to concern ourselves with, but with the continued breakdown of society. There is no doubt that some transgender people have already been walking into bathrooms of their choice, bathrooms of the opposite sex, but they did not call attention to themselves, and no one knew the difference. With this latest push to make it legal for anyone who claims to identify as transgender, we open bathrooms, locker rooms, and showers to bearded men, provocatively dressed deviants, and perverts who get delight from exposing themselves before others. If forcing young girls to shower with someone who is obviously not a female is not discrimination, what do we call it? This is just one more step in the fundamental change of America and the desire to bring us down. Make no mistake, this is just one step. If we bow to pressure and allow this travesty, liberal America will move on to the next step, and then the next. There is no end to their demands. North Carolina has been hit particularly hard economically for the refusal to bow to this latest step down the ladder of morality. Some, like NAACP President William Barber, try to paint this House Bill 2 issue as an issue of civil rights. He likens it to the struggle for civil rights in the 60s. But this is an issue of human rights, not civil rights. Barber purposely demeans the valiant Americans who stood up to oppose segregation. Without the support of the majority of white people in the 60s, the battle over segregation would not have been won. Barber ignores that fact and continues to make this a civil rights issue. But I do not know of black Americans who desire grown men in locker rooms and showers with their minor children of the opposite sex. On the contrary, black Americans as a whole are far less tolerant of such deviant behavior as many white Americans, and that speaks well of their belief in God. Already, we have liberals calling for the legalization of adults having sex with young children. It's called pedophilia, and these people are serious, and they are numerous. That could never happen in America, you might think. But did you ever think that we'd be facing a law allowing men into women's restrooms, locker rooms, and showers? We have followers of Islam here in America telling us that grown men should be allowed to have sex with girls as long as they are 9 years old. That was the age of Aisha, the 9-year-old that Muhammad married and introduced into his world of pedophilia. What comes after that? Bestiality? Some are already calling for that. No, what comes to us at some point will be the utter destruction of America by a tolerant God who has reached the limit of his tolerance. We complain about others who do not share our own opinions, even as we cite Muslims for their intolerance. The 2016 presidential race has brought out the absolute worst in our humanity. Far too many Americans violently oppose differing opinions. On the Democrat side, Hillary Clinton supporters can't contain their disdain for Bernie Sanders supporters, and Bernie supporters have no use for Clinton. These differences have bubbled up to the top and threatened the Democrat convention. For her part, Hillary Clinton cannot change the image that she has created of herself as someone who is devious, unethical, calculating, and unfeeling. A woman who lies more than an errant golf ball. Her followers are basically black Americans who simply will not acknowledge what liberal Democrats have done to them, and women who think that being a woman or a man is a prime qualification to be president. We see the result of using gender or skin color as a prerequisite for the presidency in the disastrous years of Barack Hussein Obama. Hillary endorses Obama's policies. She vows that she will continue them if she is elected. Her followers include groups like Black Lives Matter and a host of liberal anarchists who disrupt Trump rallies, block roads, and seek to deny the right of free speech to those who do not agree with them. As for Bernie, he makes no excuses for his socialism. A man who never learned to earn a paycheck until he was over 40. A man who was kicked out of a hippie commune because he was too lazy, and who lived on welfare before the liberals in Vermont sent him to the Senate. Bernie's followers are extreme liberals and young college-age folks who naively think that America and capitalism are bad and that socialism is the answer. They have no clue about the real world beyond college walls and have been fully indoctrinated by liberal professors earning six-figure salaries, protected by tenure, something that keeps them in their position regardless of their disdain for America, a support for socialism, communism, or atheism. Bernie's supporters have a propensity to riot at Hillary's events. On the Republican side, Donald Trump has bested 16 previous candidates and is now the presumptive nominee to carry the Republican banner. Trump critics, particularly Ted Cruz supporters, simply cannot get over the fact that Trump was the pick of the American people. Now, I have said in the past that I would vote for Ted Cruz if he were the nominee, and I'm certainly not anti-Cruz, but it is time to face reality, not fancy. The options are Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton, assuming that Hillary is not recommended for indictment by the FBI. something, by the way, that I believe will come to pass. If she is disqualified, that leaves a socialist, Bernie Sanders, as the Democrat nominee, unless they throw a Hail Mary to Joe Biden at the last minute. I understand disappointment when a candidate you prefer is no longer a choice, but to risk the country by cutting off your nose to spite your face is juvenile. I have said that I wish Donald Trump would be more diplomatic, not politically correct, you understand, but more diplomatic. But his style has propelled him to the top, and we have to understand it. I am convinced that Trump is savvy enough to surround himself with the experts needed to turn America back around from the disaster of Barack Obama. All of that aside, this continued vitriol, especially from former Cruz supporters, is counterproductive. If Trump is not our next president, that means that one of the most unethical, greedy politicians in our history would be elected. I don't fantasize. I live in the real world. And while I cannot say that Trump is without flaws, I can say that his flaws are minuscule compared to Hillary Clinton. Under Democrat presidency, Puerto Rico is bankrupt, and they're calling for American taxpayers to bail them out. Chicago, for all intents and purposes, is bankrupt, and other major cities here in America are close behind. An economic tsunami is on the horizon. That is not conjecture, it's fact. A fact that has been hidden from us by politicians on the right and on the left. If you ride a horse across the desert until it dies of exhaustion, you wind up on foot in hot sands, dying of thirst. That is where we find ourselves today. It's not too late to change direction. But if we continue to pick apart candidates over picayune things, we ask for disaster. Do you really care if Donald Trump has $4 billion or $10 billion? Do you really think that Trump is anti-woman because he tells one to lay off candy or another that she is cute? Is he a racist because he recognizes the danger of unfettered access to illegal aliens in America? Put aside all else, the 2016 election comes down to Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump. Search your conscience. Put aside your preference of a failed candidate and vote for one or the other, Hillary or Trump. Staying at home is the cowardly approach. If you do, you deserve what you get. Put aside hurt feelings and vote for your country. Another 4 years of Barack Obama in a Hillary mask is unthinkable. Hillary Clinton's qualifications for president are totally wrapped around her husband. Bill Clinton preferred the companionship of numerous other women to Hillary. We would be wise to understand why.